huge collection of Christo. Anybody know who Christo is? Anybody heard of him? Yeah. Oh, did we talk about the running fence?
Yeah.
We did. Okay. So that was just interesting because it had come up a couple different places lately about Christo. And so he's pulled this project, which was the next project in line. It's going to be in Arkansas. And I guess he's not going to do it now, which it was going to be really beautiful, actually. The sheeting that went over the river, over the top of the river, was this kind of silver translucent sheet. It was really beautiful material. Would have been a nice project. But that's Christo. And this was his wife who passed away a few years back. Would have been a cool project, but he's not going to do that. And whether or not you'd be interested in that or not, this is worth paying attention to if you're an artist making stuff already. This would be a good show to get into. And it's got a pretty hefty award, actually. So that's at the Petaluma Art Center. And I think I posted that once before. I just posted a reminder when I released send it out. Okay, so not much on the blog. And then we were looking at the bookstore. They're not going to get the textbook in the bookstore. They just sent an email. Maybe it was Tuesday after class or during class. They're not going to do a mid-semester order. So, which is fine, because you'll do better if you buy the textbook online than you would from there anyway. So that's what I would do, is just focus on, and Amazon seems to have a pretty good price. They were down to 21, 22 bucks. So that's pretty good. Then I've got a couple books to send around. Does anybody remember this cover? Did that one ever go around? So this one goes into, it talks about MyBridge. It's got a little bit written about MyBridge, but it goes into a lot more photographers working with motion and time. And it also has quite a few illustrations with regard to some of the apparatus that was used in the early 19th century that they built on around motion. So look at those things. And they also give you some images from MyBridge's studio in Pennsylvania, which is really kind of cool to see. The problem is this book is, the glue has dried out, so I'm not going to blame you for this as it goes around. And I'll just send them around together anyway. So it's got a few other people. You might want to, if you see some other work in here, so there's MyBridge is included, but then there's some other more contemporary people that are included in this as well that you might want to look up, like William Wegman. A lot of contemporary photographers address the work of Edward MyBridge because he was such a significant artist. And also, there was a period in about the 70s, 80s in photography called structuralist, during which a lot of photographers were working with ideas around structuralism and post-structuralism, which is a very defined, premeditated method of working with photography, where you're kind of working with the fundamental perceptual parameters of photography as content. And so you'll see some of that work that's in here too. So you might make a couple notes on artists that you find in there that are interesting and look them up, because they may or may not show up in the syllabus, so that it'll come and go and you won't see it. Then I'm sending around, I've got three books today. Another one is called Summer Nights. So this one's all shot at night. This is one of the first books of Robert Adams' work, and Robert Adams definitely comes up in your syllabus pretty quickly, actually. He's not related to Ansel Adams in any way, but he's of the same stature. At this stage of the game, he's probably the most notable landscape photographer working on the West Coast. And he's also an activist in the same sense that Ansel Adams was, a big environmental activist. And the difference is Adams took only beautiful shots, pretty much, whereas Robert Adams, this more contemporary photographer, not all of his work is beautiful. Some of it shows kind of the devastation that's going on in the landscape, in the contemporary landscape, and he kind of talks about that. But this is the first book he did, which was all done after hours, and or after dark, and it was also all done in the suburbs. So he kind of takes on the suburbs as this emergent arena or landscape, and then looks at it at night, which is kind of interesting. And there were a couple other photographers that he's quoting or playing off of. One in particular would be a guy named Bill Owens. Has anybody ever heard of Bill Owens? Ever seen any of Bill Owens' work? You should check his work out. He's an interesting guy. He did a lot of work in California, in the suburbs. And he just re-released his book, which I think is called Suburbia. And it's really good. It's a little tongue-in-cheek. It's got some humor in his work, so it's fun to look at and interesting at the same time. It's also serious. So you're obviously, since you're working up to your first shooting assignment with low light, this kind of goes to that, right? This is all shot after dark, working with just existing light. And then the last thing I want to send around is a technical book, sort of. They're kind of tech, it's kind of in that vein of technical, graphical, technical books. So there's a lot of pictures, right? So you don't have to read too much. This one's good because it goes into those things that, when you're not at Halloween or whatever, but it goes into a lot of those kind of standard problem-solving issues around shooting cats indoors in the moonlight or something like that, snow, frost. It also goes into shooting fireworks or, what's the other one? This one was before. Street scenes, cityscapes, light trails with cars, that kind of stuff, and gives you some tips and handy dandy advice on those things. Okay? And then that's what we want to concentrate on before we break today, certainly, is get to what we need to know in order to set up to shoot these low lights. So it'll be your first shooting assignment over the weekend. So on the syllabus, if you look at week two, and you probably already read this, but shooting in low light without a flash, keep that flash turned off, and then what I want you to do is generate 5 to 10 images. So what do you, 5 to 10 images, you think that means you just go out there and shoot 5 to 10 images whenever you shoot? Right. It is good. That would be a bad assumption to make. So that's a lot more images. The 5 to 10, or the 5, let's say you took the minimum. The 5 that you're going to submit to the assignments folder, right? And you can submit different images along the way as you get them. So you may go out there and shoot this weekend, and you'll get 5 or 10 that you are willing to show somebody, or that turn out okay. And you could throw those into the folder so that we can look at them on Monday. But you could keep adding and adjusting those images in your assignments folder over the course of the first half of the semester. At midterm, just so you know, with my regard to my assignments, I don't actually ever grade your assignments until we get to midterm. So all of your shooting assignments, you can continue to work on until you get to midterm. And then at midterm, I come in with a big checklist and I start going through all the folders and I go through all the assignments. So what you can do is, you get better at it the more times you shoot, right? And as we go further and further into the camera, all of the shooting assignments make more and more sense, right? At first, they don't always make sense. And shooting in low light can be kind of difficult sometimes. And given the depending on the situation that you're in, you may or may not master it that first time, but as you start to work into the camera, it could get easier and easier, and you could generate better and better images. So by the time we get to midterm, you can look back at the work that you're doing, and you can think about, with regard to shooting low light or shooting without a flash after dark in various situations, what images have you done since that were better? And just throw in the 5 to 10 images that you really liked and want to keep as examples of trying to work in low light without flash, right? It also gives you, as you work with those and rework with those shooting assignments, oftentimes you come up with ideas for portfolio subjects. So
So a lot of portfolio subjects actually come out of the low light shots. On any given semester, you know, probably 50% of the people in the room take on some aspect of low light photography as one of their portfolio subjects. Because with a digital camera, it's really, it's fun to work at night. It's much easier to work at night. With film, working in low light, working at night is a nightmare because you have the delay between the time you shoot and the time you process the film. So you're out there working in the dark, literally out there working in the dark. You don't get any feedback. But when you work with a digital camera, you're out there and you're getting constant feedback, so you can play with it and you can continue to adjust stuff. So digital kind of opened up a whole range of low light photography that has, it's kind of exploded compared to what it was whenever I was working in and there was only film. And ironically, one of the first things that I really got into as a photographer going into college, in high school I spent most of my time concentrated on athletics. I ended up photographing for all the sports teams or whatever, which was what was going on in high school. But whenever I got to college, what I ended up doing was a lot of after dark or low light work for the college itself, shooting a lot of night stuff, and really got into it with film. But if I were shooting with film and I hadn't been sponsored by, say, the college, I would not have been doing that because I blew through rolls and rolls and rolls of film that were just nothing much of anything, right? Because you don't get any feedback. Whereas with digital, you can sit there and you can play with it, see what happens. You can do that stencil business probably takes a really long time. So you've got quite a few examples too that you can look at. So this being our first time through, also, you might just look at that. I give you access to either the online class, so there's another class that mirrors this, although it doesn't really mirror it in terms of order or how we work with photography. It's a little different in the online class, but they have some of the same experiments with the light and the camera, so you can see some of theirs. This is working with lasers, car lights, stuff like that. Just low light interiors, playing around with those. They don't get quite as much feedback, so sometimes they won't advance quite as far as they will within the face-to-face class. If you look up some low light work, you'll see people use all sorts of things to play with. So one thing that people have started to do is they'll use steel wool. I think it's kind of dangerous because a lot of times they're swinging steel wool on a rope, which all these embers are flying around, and you know, if you have, I wouldn't suggest you do that for sure. I mean, catch your hair on fire would be really easy. Flashlights. There's all these new LED flashlights that are really nice to work with. You can also do color cycling now with these LEDs, which are really great. So you've got some student work to look at. Oh, great. Should make these new. Then you've got some older student work. This guy was really good. This is years. This goes back a long time now, 2009. This is early cell phone light. So he was just working with a cell phone. I can't remember if it was an iPhone or not. He was using it as the light source, so painting with light. So using just the face of the cell phone, you know, turned on, and then just shining it over the subject. And in some of these, if you look, you can kind of see the ghosted subject moving around this guy. So he's just standing still, but somebody's walking around him and painting him over with light. The average exposure here is about 30 seconds to 2 minutes. In this case, he's using it's a strobic effect. So camera's on and open, and the only light is a flashlight being turned off and on. And so in sequence, as he turns the light on, this guy pretends to go down into the cellar, right? Has anybody ever done that where you like walk in front of something and you slowly go down and they think you're going into something? So every time he turns a flashlight on, we see him in a new position as he walks across the thing. So that's just kind of using a flashlight as like a strobe. Again, painting he was working on. Started to work on a series of portraits. And this one, same guy, hits him with the flashlight once, he jumps up, turns around in the chair, turns on the flashlight again, and that's the exposure, that's the end of it. So two bursts of the flashlight. Multiple bursts of the flashlight. So with the subject moving, kind of moving back and forth, and then getting closer until he's right up in front of the camera, and hitting him with the flashlight every time. It's a cell phone just moving up the steps. And then that's just the bridge. Again, cell phone light. Illuminated a toilet. Really classy shot. Different color cell phone. And here you can really see the ghosted subject. So that's the guy painting his face red on one side, blue on the other. And he stayed still for too long, and so he started to show up. Plus, if you look in the background, there must have been a moon that night, so it's a little bit more light, so the exposure was a lot more brief. He couldn't keep it open as long. Painting. Light trails. Painting. And then that's just city light. Another one of those strobic repetitions. Painting. And then it breaks, that's good. All of this work is reversed in Photoshop. So Carl McJimsey, he just did a really good job. He would work in his garden at night. So the light and the flowers are isolated to that single light source that he brought into the garden. He brought in a great big power plug. And then what he threw on top of each one of these images was he inverted them then in Photoshop. So he did kind of a color inversion. So you get the opposite colors. You get kind of a negative effect out of the color. He created some really beautiful flowers, which I thought were interesting. And that's just not so much to look at for the low light technique, but to look at you're building source material that you're going to work with as a portfolio. Maybe working in the dark makes it easier to create something that you could isolate a flower subject and then work with it again to manipulate it in Photoshop. So that's what those were. And then Justin Stevic, the last student that you got. He was a TA for the observatory, or the, what's it called? The planetarium. And he worked with the classes whenever they went up to the Sierras in the summer. These were all just things that he and his friends did down on the beach, though. So they went out to the beach, the moon was up, this is the subject, the moon's there, you set the camera up so you get the, you know, the landscape in the background, and then they just jump into the shot and position themselves in front of the moon. So it looks like she's holding the moon. She's not actually holding the moon. I don't advise that you try to hold the moon. Okay? And they did, you know, a couple different things with it. And it's not a double exposure. It's just that the subject comes into the shot and then gets back out. They also worked with some steel wool. This is just interiors, but this was, and fire, I think it's dangerous. Celestial shots, so those things you can see, this is the length of the exposure, and the length of the exposure is equal to the amount of time that we rotate so that the stars look like they're streaking, right? So with the camera open, they were up in the Sierras, so they're isolated from all of the noise, light noise of the city. This is tough to do, and it can. And this celestial imaging is a little closer to what the experience with film is.
because you have to do long-term exposures. You can do 2-minute exposures of the stars and still get some effects. But to get stuff like that where you're doing a really long or a rotation on the North Star, like in this case here we see the Milky Way, and you can see we're picking up he's facing the North Star or the axes, right? And you can see the rotation of the Earth. That's a longer term, that's probably 30 minutes on the exposure. So then you're sitting there for 30 minutes with the camera open, which sucks up battery life really quickly for it to stay open like that, so you gotta watch out for that. You gotta have multiple batteries. And you can be out there for anywhere from, you know, you could shoot anywhere from 2 minutes, say, to about 2 hours is probably extreme. That's on the extreme end of it, although there are exposures that go 2 hours. And you don't get that immediate feedback. So if you're sitting there, even for 30 minutes, you do a 30-minute exposure, you're out there, you're freezing, you're waiting, you're sucking up battery life out of the camera, and then you get one image. To make corrections and then do another exposure means an investment of another half an hour, right? So then you're out there and it's been an hour and you're frozen. It gets uncomfortable. Take a friend or take an iPad so you can watch TV while you're out there, I guess would be my suggestion, because it does get boring. This one's even longer term exposure. And sorry I didn't give you, I'll show you where on the server you can get to larger, better versions of these. So here we see the celestial rotation. Down here what you're seeing, these are all the other students that are in the class that are up just observing the stars. So they're just up, you know, looking at constellations and stuff like that. And whenever they go on that trip, they use red covers over their flashlights, because red light, like in a dark room, they'll use red light too. It's like a safety light. It doesn't dilate your pupils, so you can illuminate things with red light and not have to adjust your vision. As soon as you look away from the light and you look up at the stars, you can still see the stars. So it doesn't affect your eyes in the same way. So that's what you see down here. It's not fire. It's just a bunch of students running around with red flashlights. And then this is looking at the North Star. So if you point your camera right at the North Star, you've got that in the sky at that time, then our rotation is around or off that, where you can actually pick up and see the rotation. And that's a long-term exposure too. I can't remember exactly. Maybe we can figure that out from the metadata. Here's another shot where you see them, the rest of the students. They've got their telescopes out, and then they've got their red flashlight. Painting. Also painting, just a green flashlight going back and forth over the subject. So just ticking it, you know, as if you're spray painting them with the light. That's steel wool being spun on a kitchen, some kind of kitchen whisk.
Like whipping eggs, right?
So for whipping eggs. And then they put on a rope and then spun it over somebody's head so you can see where the spinning is. And then that's just all the stuff falling off. Something similar, but a little chunkier spray. Same. And that's painting with one of those flashlights and more moon stuff. So this was a previous student back in 2010. Okay, so that's student examples going back. And then down here below, underneath your artist for the week, you've got a few different types of links. This one from lynda.com. So this one, kind of like the blog post, you're in Lynda. We get Lynda? I think we get Lynda for free, actually, as part of the college. You get access to anything on Lynda. I link to just things randomly along the way just to pull you back into Lynda. There's a lot of free course material you can get from Lynda, which sometimes is really good. Some of the people on Lynda are pretty interesting. In this one, This has not been long, I don't think. This is somebody, Joseph, photo Joseph. This guy looks kind of weird. But in this one, he's looking at low light shooting. So you get to preview that course. And you probably don't get the whole thing. I haven't looked at it for a little while. He's just going to give you straight up some of the intro, I think, to this. But then while you're in there, you should check out Lynda and just look at what they have. Because there is a lot of free material that you can get. How many of you have been on Lynda? Just a few? It's worth checking out. You get free stuff. Free lessons and stuff. There's one guy in particular you should look at. His name is Ben Long. This guy. And he does some really cool stuff. And he gives away a free technique a week or something like that that he puts up here. And then a lot of this material will be free. So you can go in there and just check it out. So again, while you're in looking at one resource, be sure to look around at the originating site that it's coming from so you can see if there's something else that you'd be interested in. Then light stenciling, which we were just talking about. Some cool stuff going on with that. It's been around for a little while now, but still pretty cool. These light stencils. And then this other one, the secondary link, kind of shows you one guy's technique. And he built, he builds a box that he shoves his flash into. And there's the box. It looks like that. And then right about here. He sticks the flash inside of it, and then he shows you the stencil. There's the stencil. So that shows you kind of how they did those. Similar kind of thing, a little different apparatus, who knows. And then another one, this one's been around for a while. I always leave this one up just because you see the variety of equipment that the guy packs around. Lots of different lights. And gives you some ideas on things that you could pick up that maybe would be fun to work with. Like, always in the fall because of Halloween, they're always stocked with all those, what are they called? You know, those little sticks. Glow sticks and glow necklaces and now glow wands and all kinds of glow stuff. They just keep coming up with stuff, so you can see those. And then it kind of details some of this stuff that he's using, these light sticks. That's all it is. Any questions, thoughts on that low light business? We didn't talk about Anna Atkins. I didn't know this person, so I threw them in there. Never heard of Anna Atkins. Kind of interesting. She worked with a lot of solar print stuff. So this is cyanotypes. You can buy this print paper. I should have brought the pack over for you. You can buy it. It's called Sun Prints. Kind of an early method of making images. They did it with a lot of shadow objects. So you put an object on top of there, like plants are really good for that because they're somewhat translucent, so the light passes through them and you pick up that edge. You can see, so that's just light sensitive paper, and then you soak it in water, and it's coated with cyanotype chemistry, and they're using the same chemistry now in the Sun Print paper. You'll find it like toy stop shops and stuff like that. And she was just an early person, and she worked with the same thing. Not somebody that's all that significant, just somebody I ran into and I'd never heard of her, so I threw her in. Astrophotography, there's one more link down there. Gallery of images. These are good, these are cool. Really nice shots. Look how long that exposure is. Looking at the North Star. It's probably 2 hours. And there's a lot of really good ones on this. Nebulae. Northern Lights. And so when looking at that link, look where you are, you're in DP Review. And you might just look through DP Review and see what resources they have with regard to shooting astro stuff. could be something in there. Okay, any questions on that? Any thoughts? Anybody know of anything happening explosive over the weekend that you might be able to photograph? Nothing being set on fire. And the moon, again, we still don't have the moon, right?
That's good.
What? It's good. It is actually good not to have the moon whenever you start, because then you reduce the amount of light. So then if you're bringing light into it, it's better. If you're going to do that ghosting thing, it's better. And you have that technique with the zoom. That's a good one to remember also. I should have some zoom examples that I throw in there. You might need to add that. I told you last week also, make sure if you've got a tripod, it's good to use a tripod. So it might be something to think about. Jeremiah's Photo Corner. Does anybody know of this place? Jeremiah, you've been there?
By Spencer's?
Yeah. Right over by Spencer Sisters, behind Sears. So you go through Sears out the parking lot, and that road, South A Street. There's a guy. If you don't know Jeremiah, you should know him. Jeremiah's Photo Corner. Something you can map on your phone. I worked with him for years. He used to be an employee at another photo. We had one other photo supplier called North Bay Photo, which was in business for about 6 or 7 years and then ran out of business. And then Jeremiah took the business and started his own over on South A. He's also a good source or resource on the weekend if you're out shooting and you run into any problems, or if you need anything in particular for class, he's a good person to go to. So he's got good advice. What was I thinking? And also South A Street's good to know about. They often have street parties. Every season they have a street party or two that you can go down, and it's good to shoot because a lot of people come out. It's a good place to kind of work the street whenever you're out there. What was I thinking about Jeremiah? Oh, Jeremiah's got, he's been kind of bringing in stuff, even commissioning used equipment to get used equipment into the store for photography. So he's got lenses, sometimes he's got used tripods on sale, he reconditions them and then sells them again. So they're a little cheaper and they're usually better than the ones that you buy new. You go to Best Buy and look at the tripods for digital cameras are really not so good. And they're really light. Whenever they say they're digital tripods, that means they are too light to be a tripod. They would fall over with any real lens. They're good for backpacks, I guess, because you don't have to carry so much if you're backpacking. But when you actually try to use one of them, it kind of falls over and you have to put weights on it. Jeremiah's got some good, and he'll make good recommendations too, without trying to just take your money, which is nice. So you might look him up. He's in this local galleries and suppliers link that you had from the first week. That's Jeremiah. And then there's some other sites there that you can look at for equipment. If you don't have a tripod, I recommend everybody has a tripod. With a digital camera, a tripod's really good. It slows down the process a little bit so that you're not, whenever you're holding it, you're kind of shooting all the time. Whenever you put it on a tripod, you kind of frame, and it slows you down, so you kind of take your time to point at things and figure it out. It's good to have one. Let's see. So I already talked through everything we're going to have to talk through for next Tuesday. Isn't that good? We got that out of the way. I'll just review as you run out the door later. Okay. And I should take roll because I'm about to forget. So Emily, you're here, right?
Yeah.
Aaron's here. Max?
Here.
Mackenzie?
Here.
Mackenzie, you're here. Chantal?
Here.
Raul, Mariah, Logan, Ashley, Julian,
which one?
Oh, yeah. Julian, Matt? Me, go drop Steve. Steve. Kenny, you're here. I've got a total of 3 people figured out. Megan. Where Megan live? Chris. Chris. Terry.
You're here.
Jessica, no. You're Jessica. Spencer, Spencer's here. Barry, you're here. Sue. No, Sue. Tevin. And then John, you're here too. Okay, do we get through? Yep.
I'm supposed to remind you that some of us didn't get our
initial presentations.
Presentation?
Yep. And how many of those do we have that haven't gone? 1, 2, just 2 of you. Well, that's easy. Let me kill this front light and then we'll do that.
And that's the elements.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be fine with that, but you're probably going to want something else. Did you look at layers?
No.
It means whatever you get on,
a hard time getting it on that computer, teachable.
Getting it to run.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Yeah, it's probably getting too old. You might even be better off at this point.
I probably didn't tell you guys about GIMP, did I?
Yep.
Did I mention GIMP? GIMP is a shareware application. Does everybody know what shareware is? Freebie software online. They share it with you. Usually there's a suggested payment, but you don't have to pay it in order to run the software. And then if you use it, they ask that you pay them later. Some of it's called shareware, some of it's called freeware. Freeware is just software that's on there that's free to use. Okay, GIMP is a really good product, actually. It's been around for a long time now. It's compatible with Photoshop, and you can generate Photoshop files out of it. So Photoshop has its own proprietary file type called PSDs. And with GIMPs, you can save PSDs. You can also open PSDs. You can also open JPEGs, GIFs, all of that, everything else too. But if you go to that website, you can download GIMP and install it. And it'll run on anything, or it used to. I actually haven't installed it for about 5 years. But whenever I first started using it, I had a lot of older laptops, and I'd loan them out, and I could get it to run on basically any laptop. So you might check out that one, because it does have layers, and it's compatible with Photoshop, and it's free. And then what I'd be looking for is, and as we get into it, I wouldn't buy anything right away if you're going to get experience now in Photoshop, whenever we're working. And then you're also going to get some experience working with Lightroom. So you can decide. Photoshop, going for traditional Photoshop kind of setup is one way to do it, but another way would be Lightroom is its own workspace. So kind of whenever you go for Lightroom, you build collections of all of your images. And then you work out of those collections. Whenever you do Photoshop, you just build directories of images organized by chronology or something like that. And then you work with raw, kind of the files themselves. So the two are kind of two different approaches to what I told you about before called workflow. So you want to get some experience of either one of them. You know, Photoshop and Lightroom are both, you can get a trial. And the trial lasts for 3 months, so you can download from Adobe's site both those software programs and run them for 3 months, Photoshop and Lightroom. Which might be another way to just load the trials, run the trials, if you can get it to install, depends on how old your system is, and that gives you 3 months of that software.
Is it robust?
Photoshop and Lightroom? Or GIMP?
The download for free?
It's pretty good size. It takes a little while. You want to have a broadband network. I mean, you want to be on, you know, a good, you want good download speeds where you could be there for a little while.
Can I come here and download it?
Yeah, you could download it here too. You could download the installer here onto a drive and then take it back and install it.
Onto your computer?
I think so. You have to do this activation thing, I think. You'd have to investigate a little bit. I haven't done that for a while. Because sometimes they have you download a software utility that is the installer, and then you install the installer, and then the installer connects to the service and downloads the actual software. So you can end up with downloading just a little thing that is an installer application, and then it starts downloading the big thing later. Oh, let's see. So I've got Photoshop open, but not the bridge, and I don't have the server, so I'm going to leave the server. Everybody good with remembering how to log in? Anybody have trouble getting on? Everything's holding together? Out of the bridge, and when we take apart your shooting assignments or anything else, I'm always going to work out of the bridge. So follow along as I'm doing stuff, and I'll try to tell you things that I do along the way, and then you can see, and you'll get used to seeing it, which will help. It's a really good editing application, the bridge. So it's a great way to work with files, sort files. You don't have to open them, so you don't have to wait for it to open, which is nice. The only downside to the bridge, especially in here, is that we can't save your window arrangements the way you set everything up whenever you work with the bridge. If you're at home, you save what's called the workspace. So I can save this, I make a new workspace, I give it my name, I save it, and then I can, whenever you come back, it'll always go back to this setup, but you can go workspace, your setup, and it'll rearrange all of the windows and palettes. So at home, you can make your own workspace and set the whole thing up exactly the way you want it to look whenever you're using it. And then if anybody resets your windows, you can go back in and reset them back to how you like it. The problem with these computers is they're running this software program called Deep Freeze, so every time we shut them down, they completely erase all of our preferences. So it doesn't do us any good. Okay, whose work am I looking at? Who wants to show up? Steve? Is that HDR?
No.
No? It's got an HDR look to it. You know what kind of processing you ran it through?
That might have been Elements.
It looks like you opened up the midtones. So it's got a lot of midtones. I don't see a lot of deep shadows where I'm losing information, so a lot of the midtones are opened up. But the highlights aren't burning out, so I can tell it's kind of neutralized in terms of contrast.
Sure.
It's got kind of a different look to it. Looks like the cover of a magazine. It's a good composition.
Is that good or bad?
Yeah, I mean, it's just got a certain look to it. You know, like Better Homes and Gardens cover. Which is, that's not a good or bad judgment. Just maybe the composition is so clean, and then the midtones are you know, whenever they do a magazine, they're starting to add saturation. If you look at images now versus looking at images going back in magazines back, say, a decade or maybe a little more, you'll notice that the contrast and the saturation of images is increasing. Like, it's exponential. Now, everybody expects hugely saturated colors and lots of contrast, lots of pop, in order to get people's attention. And I think it's just because there's so much more media now than there used to be, that there's no room for subtlety. So there's a certain subtlety to this image that I think is reminiscent of an older image. Good. So, landscapes. Flowers?
That was not manipulated. I would like to.
Did you hit it with a flash?
Zoom in more, and that's with flash.
Yeah.
And make it more, not abstract, but.
Sharp.
Composed, I guess.
You can see that shadow, that strong shadow makes it pop off the background, which the flash is good for. It's really not good if that's, you want some subtlety or you want something softer, say a portrait, and you hit them with the flash. It makes it so obviously in your face and harsh. Like, you know, those edges are good on a flower maybe for detail, bad on a face. Yeah, exactly.
And that's how I might present it, is blown up like that.
Cropped in that big, yeah. It's nice. It's a good color. Flash didn't overdo it. You can see it here in the reflection. Another landscape. Nice. Slight modification, maybe cropping it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
To crop into it. Resolution, you gotta watch on crops. The one thing to watch out for when you crop images is you're taking the center of it and you're reducing the number of pixels, right? So the resolution here dropped a little bit from the cropping. So you can go in and you can grab things now and you can pull them out and crop them. But whenever you do that, you blow the pixels up as you stretch it out to zoom in, and then you lose resolution. Same thing happens whenever you use a zoom lens. So be careful with your zoom. Most SLRs only have optical zoom, but SLR type, I don't know if we have any of those. I'll have to look at all the cameras eventually, but SLR type cameras, point and shoots, have two types of zoom. They have an optical and a digital zoom. And a digital zoom extracts the outer pixels from the sensor. It turns them off, and it blows up the sensor.
It's like a cell phone, right?
Cell phone does that too.
Oh.
And so whenever you zoom in with a cell phone, it gets softer. The image gets pixelated because it's actually throwing information out. It takes the outer edge of the picture and throws it away and just blows up the center. That's called a digital. I think that's digital. And the real version is called optical. Whenever you zoom with a lens, when you zoom in, you're actually zooming, you're magnifying the scene. Whenever you do it with a digital, it's blowing it up. That's a nice shot. Good time of day, nice mood, good weather. Got good saturation too. Looks like it might have been manipulated just a touch. Maybe noise. It's got some high ISO noise here. Combination probably of saving it as a JPEG. It's got JPEG compression maybe a little bit, which does the same kind of effect as color noise. And so that pixelization, that modeling of that is caused by either compression or by the sensor and a high ISO. Oh, and you guys are the lucky ones. I just found out that's a brand new projector. And it does larger screen. So actually, I kind of noticed it last time, but I wasn't really paying attention. I turned around maybe twice and looked at the images. For the last like 5 years, we've had this projector that was completely washed out. And you couldn't see any of the highlights. And you could barely see noise. So whenever I'd be talking about something like noise, no one could see what I was talking about. But in this one, you could see there's pretty good saturation. Can you see where it turns purple, and then turns green, and then it turns purple, and then green? That pattern is noise, as well as the kind of pixels that you see, that kind of chunkiness to the surface. That's noise.
Is that a cat? Is that a cat up there? Like that was photoshopped in, a little black thing?
It's a bird, I think.
It looks like a cat.
It's a flying cat.
A flying cat. They have those.
Oh, good eyes.
Any manipulation?
None. I mean, it's
blown up.
Low resolution, but it still has a feeling.
Yeah. Got a little pixelization. Kind of gives it a nice kind of soft edge. A little like a painting. Ooh, nice light. Good composition too. Lead you into the image and off into the trail. Beautiful garden. Where is that?
Victoria.
Sharp. Is she about to jump in there? What is that? Is that a tree?
Looks like a tower.
It looks like a tower, but the texture is like a tree.
There might have been a quarry in there.
A what?
A quarry?
And where's that?
Same, Victoria, BC.
This is weird, Canadians.
It's an old camera. It's not sensitive enough.
Is that Mendocino? Mm-hmm. Nice. I like the mist on it. It's good. Doing something. Again, good. It's a good angle. I like the composition. What happened here?
That's a pep rally. My daughter's in the middle. Just the movement and how she came out, more focus. Mm-hmm.
A little motion blur in that. I wonder if there was some flash going off too.
No.
No? It's got a feel of a little bit of flash. It might not have been your flash. I wonder if there was any flashes. Mm-hmm. As you move through it, like what, this is an effect that you can do with flash where you set a shutter speed that's, or a time value that's slower than the flash itself. And a sync on a flash is at about, I think now the sync on flash is at 250, 1/250th of a second. So if you set it below that, around 60th, the flash goes off and you see what the flash does, which is stop the action. But as the camera moves, you get this swipe of color, ambient color, from the light itself, because the camera's still open even after the flash is gone. And it's kind of a nice effect. You can use it in portraits in particular to kind of give it, stop the action, stop the subject entirely so they're frozen, but then also let it kind of have some ambient color.
It's pretty zoomed in, probably maximum.
Yeah. like a gymnasium or something where it was dark. Yeah. So it's probably just motion blur. Nice. So you want to be Ansel Adams?
I like Ansel Adams.
Yeah. I mean, the landscapes, that's, you know. It's good. Okay. Who else? Yeah.
Last one. I didn't take any of the pictures. They're just things I'm interested in.
Okay. Where'd you get them?
Just Google.
Google?
Yeah, I just typed in like what I'm interested in. And more or less the theme. I'm studying film, but I feel like this could really help and kind of like capture the human experience. So like what people really look like when they're sad or what they look like when they're in joy or something. So that's kind of what I'd like to focus on.
So more candid, less pose.
Kind of. Well, kind of just identifying what that's like and then eventually working with actors to see if I can capture them or stuff like that.
That's good. I think that's good prep for filmmaking would be, I think more filmmakers probably should practice at stills to start with, because it seems like it's less and less there's a consideration for composure.
And then I guess so in photography, I guess it would be portraits that I'm interested in and landscapes and kind of abstract stuff like that for room that was the room portrait. Mm-hmm.
Good and long room.
And then cityscape.
There's a good alleyway in Petaluma that's brick.
I think I've been down it.
Yeah.
Is it right by that little fancy restaurant across the street?
Yeah. Right off the main.
Yeah. Okay. I may have been down it. I think I was messing around.
Yeah, because we don't have a lot of brick, so it's hard to find a brick alleyway.
It's like Railroad Square. And
yeah. I mean, San Francisco, if you go Natoma, or there's another street. What's that street that runs right by the pyramid? Going out of my head, I can't remember. There's a couple in San Francisco that are there too. I like the tag on the door too.
And I've always liked National Geographic, so there's random two animal pictures.
There was a guy in the spring of last year that was shooting animals and got a couple foxes out in Forestville. That's a good low light shoot because you got to catch them when they're out. And they're semi-nocturnal. Yikes. I know that shot.
I should have put the photographer on the files, but I messed up.
This was a recent documentary shot that I run into this. I can't remember if I did it. What are there certain sites you're following?
No, just interests. Like for that would be like a social issue of homelessness, family homelessness, and all that stuff. So just certain things that I'll see a picture. Mainly random.
This is cool. It seems like that could be the Sierras on the other side, maybe. Even this side, actually. There's a couple of rivers there at the base, foothills.
Did look familiar. My friend liked the Sierras, and I thought that was a different angle from this in his picture, but it looked familiar, so.
Yeah. Is there trouble? Do you know the film Breathless?
I have no
idea. No? You gotta see it. French version. Yeah, there's an American version with Richard Gere. It's trash. And then there's the French version. The original French version is really good. I can't remember who the guy is. Montagne? That guy? Breathless. You'll like it. It's like, you know, this Bonnie and Clyde syndrome.
Oh, cool.
Where was this? Is that
I think it was a protest, and they just were getting too rowdy or whatever.
Shit.
New York.
What was this? Lynn. Somebody needs to get some shoelaces.
Yeah.
That's it.
It seems very filmic to me, that shot. Either zoom, that's like the end of a shot or the beginning of a shot, and then pull away into something else.
I've seen that before. I don't think it's a shot. I think it's a digital creation.
Oh, really? It's definitely an image.
I'm not sure all of these are digital. I just went for like kind of like what I'm interested in. This is just the like natural beauty of like places that have been around for a while. They just kind of have that feel about them where it's almost like you don't even have to try to do anything.
Yeah. It's ambitious.
Oh yeah. Not expecting you. Working for you.
Yeah, one at a time. Anybody else? Wait, do we have two? Just two? Oh, that was cool. All right. I want more. Better get going. All right, let's take a little break. 10 minutes.